Now back to more of the most trusted sports information on the air. Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
We've made it to hour number three of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. A little bit later this hour, we catch up with our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as we turn our attention to the National Football League. Andrew joins us now. He heard the cue to call and is going to do his best to try and score a four. Andrew, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you, John?
Doing well. First of all, we really appreciate your listening. Thank you so much for that. So it's Tennessee, first road game, first conference game at Florida, Saturday night, 7 o'clock kick. How do you see it playing out between the Volunteers and the Gators?
Yeah, the Bulls aren't there yet. So I got Bulls 10, Florida 56.
So you have Florida 56-10, okay? Well, Andrew, again, we really appreciate your listening. Congratulations on getting through. Have a great week. Good luck with the drawing, and take care, all right? Sure to appreciate it. So here's how it works. We put Andrew's prediction in with all the others. If his is drawn on Friday and Florida wins by the score that he predicted, then, Jimmy, something big happens for Andrew.
$42,000 big, the iconic Mustang. Yes. So that's what he would win. And I saw a picture of that Mustang. It's really good looking.
It sure is.
Although Florida's playing Tennessee, not Tennessee Tech.
Yeah.
What was Andre? Come on, Andrew. Anyway, yeah, that's a pretty lopsided score. I don't see that being even close because, one, I think Tennessee's better than that. And secondly, I don't know that Florida can muster enough emotion as it did last week against Alabama.
But, Andrew, we sure do appreciate it. And listen for your next opportunity to score four. That will come during the starting lineup tomorrow morning.
Let's hear from Alante Taylor, Tennessee defensive back. He's one of the leaders on the team, one of the leaders of that secondary. And he's off to a good start. He met with the media yesterday. Here comments from Tennessee's senior cornerback, Alante Taylor.
Alante, did you think you had not stepped out of bounds on Saturday on your interception? How disappointing were you when they ruled you had?
Yeah, so when I was running, I was looking down trying to make sure I didn't. I seen my left foot was close, so I just kept running. But if you see in the video, I heard the whistles blow, and I looked back and kind of threw my head up. So very disappointed, kind of the same location as a Texas A&M game. So I just got to really get off the sideline and, you know, kind of bring my high school days back and get jiggy with it.
Alante, afterwards, how much did you hear about all the reaction and the tracking of the free cookies with your name, image, likeness deal that you had there?
Yeah, so when I got to the sideline, a couple guys were like, so I get free cookies? And I was like, yeah, you do. And just telling those guys about it. But great experience. You know, the NIL thing is really big. When I went to the one down on Kingston Pike, I met a lot of fans, a lot of people saying thank you. But, you know, something small, but also something that I want to continue to do, more than one interception for sure.
With Florida's ability to run the football, especially with the quarterbacks, you know, how are you guys in the secondary going to come up and try to help in that?
Yeah, so one thing we work on every week is tackling, right? And we understand that Florida likes to run the ball. They have really good backs, strong backs, good offensive line, things like that. So quarterbacks like to run as well. So just making sure that we can make tackles. I feel like if we lower our, as far as missed tackles go, we'll have a positive side on that. But, you know, game planning, scheming, things like that, and just attacking the week the right way.
You've played in this game before, obviously. Just what do you think of when you think of Florida receivers and just this matchup between you all, and what do you all need to do to be successful?
Yeah, as far as receivers go, I mean, we're in SEC, so you're going to play good receivers week in and week out when you play in this conference. So I wouldn't say nothing too big on the receivers. You just kind of go with the same game plan, work on technique, work on staying square, things like that. As far as going into this game, mindset-wise, you just got to be consistent, you know, play physical. It's going to be a physical game all four quarters, right? So I feel like come out, like I said, be consistent, play physical, match their intensity, match, you know, the energy. It's going to be night game, ESPN, 7 o'clock, stadium's going to be crazy. So just come in ready to play, keep the main thing the main thing.
Alante, some of y'all's receivers tell us that they're hitting those vertical routes in practice. They're not always coming out in the game, but they're hitting them in the practice. You're on the other side of that. Is that true? Are they hitting the deep balls in practice?
Yeah, they are hitting them in practice, but I feel like kind of you watch the game, we're actually doing better in games as far as with the deep balls. So, you know, they're making us better. We're making those guys better. And, you know, like we always say, like Coach always says, keep going. We're going to connect a couple of those, and I feel like this Saturday is going to be a game where we get those big plays.
Alante, when you look at a quarterbacks who can run the way Florida's can run, I mean, y'all see some of this stuff in practice, but also you can't hit the quarterbacks in practice. How difficult is it to account for quarterbacks who can run like that?
I wouldn't say it's difficult. Although we can't hit the quarterbacks in practice, we kind of learn on, make sure we get the right body angles, make sure we're staying low, getting ready to attack the thigh board. Some Coach Martinez talks about a lot. So although we can't hit our quarterbacks, we make sure we finish running right past them as if we could. Just kind of getting that tackle mental rep in. So when it comes game time, you're not trying to figure out if you should hit them where and how. So
the quarterbacks are part of this too, but statistically you guys have been really good against the run this year. What are some of the specific reasons why you think you guys have had success at that and can carry that over into SEC play?
Yeah, I feel like we kind of swarm to the ball. If you kind of watch in games, there's a lot of orange jerseys around the football whenever it's being ran. So, continue to do that, but making sure that first person who goes in there is wrapping them up, second person coming in there and try to get some takeaways, not just interception-wise, but cause some fumbles.
Well, I'll tell you, those two young safeties, Tamarian and Christian, got quite a bit of snaps on defense in the game last week. What was it like to see them get out there and play, and kind of how have you seen them grow over the course since you guys started camp?
Yeah, it's fun. It's awesome because, those guys make a lot of plays in practice. One thing I've kind of said as I've been doing this is, everybody's getting the exact same amount of reps. Everybody's making big plays in practice. So whenever their time comes, they're ready to play. And that's exactly what y'all seen Saturday. Those guys are ready to play when their numbers got called and, they didn't take a step back.
Alante, regardless of the level of competition, how much did y'all need a game defensively where you forced four turnovers? I mean, those kind of things, they can come in bunches. It can kind of get everybody excited. Do you feel like that's something that y'all's defense needed?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Getting our hands on the ball, getting those turnovers, kind of get a little more juice in yourself. You kind of see those interceptions that are happening in practice come to play in games. So, coming off of a game where we had four interceptions is something that we'll take into this week of practice, but also something that we look forward to taking more, if possible, come Florida.
Alante, even obviously all the freshmen, but even some of the transfers that have come in have never played an SEC game, especially one on the road. I mean, what do you tell, some of those guys if they ask you about sort of what to expect? And is football still football, or does it, is it a little bit different?
Tell them to enjoy it, but also know that we're down there to play a game, right? It's fun as far as, guys probably haven't been on a plane before, getting ready to go on a plane and not have to go through a big check-in like you would if you were traveling somewhere else. But, that's part of it is fun. Going to the hotel, all those things is fun on a Friday. The travel part of it is great. But, making sure we keep the main thing. Know that we're down here to handle business. And just kind of love on those guys and, just let them know, their opportunities will come as well. Kind of like we talked about all year. Make sure you stay prepared, practice mentally, get mental reps, things like that. So when your number's called, you can be ready to play.
Kind of going back to those deep threats, I mean, is that one of the worst feelings as a defensive back to get just kind of completely burned on a vertical route like that? And also kind of what can that do mentally against the defense when you got to just collect yourself and play another snap there a couple seconds later?
Yeah, I mean, as a DB, it's going to happen sometimes, right? Try to make sure you play your assignment. Kind of had a few busted plays last week, one of those things where you just aren't playing your right assignment. So make sure you stay dialed in, play your assignment. If you have deep thirds, play deep thirds and don't come up too much. If you're playing man-to-man, try to play the best technique that you can. But as a DB, it's going to happen sometimes. And you just got to snap it clear and play the next play. It happens to the great ones if you watched this past Sunday.
Alante Taylor, Tennessee cornerback. And the Lady Vols hosted the Mercedes-Benz Tournament at Cherokee Country Club. Didn't fare quite as well as they had hoped. They were right in the running for it, but then today they ended up shooting 11 over par, and so they tied for sixth. They were 14 over for the tournament. Brigham Young won it at plus two. Miami was at plus five. Texas San Antonio, Chattanooga, Augusta at plus 12, and then the Lady Vols at plus 14. They finished sixth out of 17 teams. The best performance was turned in by Vanessa Gilley. She tied for 16th. He also had a tie for 20th with Nicole Whitson and Kayla Holden. And then the outstanding freshman, Bailey Davis, tied for 26th. Next up, for the Lady Vols, they will play in the Blessings Tournament in Arkansas in 2 weeks. That's October 4th through the 6th. It'll be on the Golf Channel. Let's hear now from Aaron Murray. He's the former quarterback at George, among the SEC's all-time leaders in passing yards, a four-year starter for the Bulldogs, now with CBS. He spoke to the Knoxville Quarterback Club on Monday, and he talked openly. He started out his talk about saying he wasn't a fan of Tennessee's former head coach. Here's Aaron Murray.
A few years ago, I was not the biggest fan of your previous head coach, Pruitt. Just did not like the man. He did not treat my boy, Coach Rick, really well.
We don't hate him.
And I guarantee you what you did either. But I do like what you're doing, Coach. Heupel is a guy that I got to cover and watch at UCF. Really enjoy his offense. Really love the way he's able to develop that side of the football. And I think we've all seen it through the first 3 weeks. Just the effort level and the competitiveness that you're seeing with the Vols right now. I think that's the first thing you want to see. Do they care? Do they want to go out there and play? Are they going to give up? And you saw that 2 weeks ago versus Pittsburgh, a team that didn't want to quit, a team that said, okay, we're down. This is a really good ACC team, but we're in a dogfight. And our starting quarterback may be out. We got our backup in. We're going to go out there and do our thing. And I just think that obviously, the more that depth comes, we all know you guys got just butchered with the transfer portal in the offseason, and it's tough to compete in the SEC for all four quarters if you don't have depth. If you can't rotate linebackers, if you can't rotate defensive linemen, especially outside of football, it's kind of why you see that it's guns blazing. First, second quarter, you guys come out defensively, kicking butt, TFLs left and right, holding offenses, and then just kind of wear down on you guys a little bit through the game. So I love the coaching. I think those guys on that side of the football are going to get better. It's just it's a depth issue right now, so I'm not too stressed about it.
And also from Aaron Murray, he said that he actually likes Hendon Hooker at quarterback for Tennessee more than Joe Milton.
Offensively, I must say I like Hooker better at quarterback. Milton, he reminds me a little bit. I always tell people, was it 4 years ago, I went to a spring practice for Georgia, and it was Justin Fields' first year, and he was an early enrollee, and obviously number one recruit in the country, big quarterback, 6'3", you know, 220, rocket arm, and all he wanted to do was put a hole in someone's chest. You know, Justin, his whole life, this is an issue with lots of quarterbacks, I see young quarterbacks, they think that I need to throw the ball 100 miles per hour to be successful. That you know, you're taught from age 6 to, you know, 10 years old, every camp and every league you're in, if you got the big arm, you're going to be the dude. You're going to be the quarterback. And so everyone's preaching to you, keep throwing the ball hard, keep gunning it in there, and they really don't learn touch and anticipation. And that was Justin's issue. Justin showed up to Georgia, and he wanted to put a hole in everyone's chest. And I think he learned when he transferred to Ohio State, that's not the move. That's not what you want to do. It's all about touch, anticipation, putting the ball, and making it catchable. And I think a little bit to do with Milton is he's a big kid. You know, he's 6'5", 250, 6'6", whatever it is. And he's been told his whole life that you have a rocket arm, that you can throw the ball harder than anyone else out there. And it's too much. And you're seeing overthrows. You're seeing balls that aren't catchable. You're seeing easy slant passes that are behind the receiver because you're throwing it as far as you can and you're a little bit late and just not anticipating. So I think if he can work on that, and let's not forget he's young, I do think he has the ability, so I'm not going to completely write him off. But just when you watch, you know, Hooker go out there and do his thing, he throws a lot catchable ball. He throws with better anticipation. Obviously, he's a little bit more seasoned because of his playing time before he transferred here to Tennessee. But right now, I do think he's the guy that gives you guys the best opportunity.
And despite what Emory Jones did against Alabama, Aaron Murray is not all in on the Florida quarterback.
And I don't know how healthy Richardson is. I'm still not 100% sold on their current quarterback. I do think Richardson's the better guy for Florida. So if he's not healthy, if he's not out there doing backflips in pregame and his hamstring's a little banged up, I do give you guys a somewhat fighting chance in that one. We'll see what happens. It's going to be about running the football.
Also, Aaron Murray had a chance to play in Neyland Stadium. He really talked about how he enjoyed the Tennessee home field.
If you guys keep winning, I love coming here. I love your stadium. It's probably the most intimidating stadium I've ever played in my entire life. That includes all college, all NFL, high school. I mean, when you guys are good and rolling, it's the loudest place in America. I remember that fourth quarter, we're backed up at our own 4-yard line. We're losing senior year. And, I mean, three of my starting receivers were out that game because you guys had that stupid hill in the middle of the field where you just didn't know how to run on it. I mean, three guys tore ACLs in that game alone. I was on my third or fourth string running back. I had guys in the huddle literally shaking because they were, you know, intimidated with 100,000 plus fans in the stands. So I would, you know, be a counselor to everyone, try to calm their souls while trying to call a play. And it's tough. It is. I mean, when you guys pack that stadium out, there is no better environment in all of America when you get that place rolling. So,
And here's Aaron Murray on what it was like to play for Mark Richt.
Coach Richt is, everything you see is true, and everything you see is who he is, and that is one of the things that every coach, when you're getting recruited, walks into your living room and sits down at dinner with you and says this about, oh, we're going to turn you into an All-American, we're going to turn you into a first-round draft pick, and you're going to be a starter here. Coach Richt sat down with my parents and said, I'm going to turn your son into a man. And he's going to be ready to take on life's challenges, whether it's football, business, as a father, as a husband, at the end. And we, of course, talk about football, but we talk a lot about faith and life outside of football. And my parents was like, oh, my God, it's a brush in front of there, because of all, every coach just wants to talk ball and ball and stats. And did you watch our game last week? Did you see what our quarterback did? Did you see this receiver that we have? I said, we talked about that, but that was maybe half of what we talked about with Coach Richt. And when you showed up to Georgia, it was the same way. It was all about, you know, putting yourself in the best situation possible to become the best man you could be when you leave these doors. And I loved every minute I had with him. Still extremely close to Coach Richt. Obviously, I think the entire SEC community was hurting when they heard the news. Coach Richt had Parkinson's. And yeah, I was at a wedding for Christian Robinson, who was one of my roommates, who's now the linebacker coach for Florida, and we were in Nashville, and we were all, it was 2 nights before the wedding, and we were all, you know, having drinks, having dinner, and then all of our phones, like, at once just went off with the news, and we all just sat there quietly for, like, 5-10 minutes, and then proceeded for hours afterwards just to talk about Coach Richt and the impact that he had on our lives. And you ask any former player, coach, fan, equipment manager, whoever it is, and he found a way to touch everyone. So just make sure you keep your prayers for Coach Richt as he continues to battle. But like I said, he's a man of faith, so I know he's gonna you know, go through this just fine.
Comments from former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray, now with CBS at the Knoxville Quarterback Club.
We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as he joins us for his weekly visit. John, I saw in your wonderful paper that there were a handful of dude ranches in the Houston area that could really bring home the feeling of what it's like to be a cowboy. Have you ever visited one of those?
First of all, I have no idea about any dude ranches being anywhere in the Houston area. That's news to me, because that's not the kind of place I would generally hang out. Now, if it was in Dallas, I'd understand it, because people in Dallas like to wear cowboy boots, Stetson, and snap shirts, and I'm sure they'd like to have dude ranches somewhere out there around South Fork or the Cowboys facility. But in Houston, third largest city in the country with about 6 million in the area, I like to think we got a little more sophistication.
It was a tough trip for the Texans to go to Cleveland. Browns get the win. Tyrod Taylor gets banged up. What does the quarterback situation look like going into this week's matchup?
Taylor's out for at least a month with a hamstring injury. They're going to play Davis Mills, their first draft choice, third-round pick from Stanford. And I did a column today on how hard it is for rookie quarterbacks. And I'm telling people here, my goodness, why would people expect anything from him? Trevor Lawrence, the first overall pick, has been awful. Zach Wilson, the second overall pick, has been awful. And if you look at the five quarterbacks going in the first round, Trey Lance at San Francisco has thrown one pass for a touchdown. That's it. Justin Fields come off the bench for two games. He's about to start. His rating's 38.2. Lawrence is 57.1, and Wilson's is 56.1, and Mac Jones is 96.7, but he just got to play the Jets, so anybody who plays the Jets ought to have a good rating. And another thing about rookie quarterbacks, everybody would like to find a Russell Wilson in third round, a Dak Prescott in fourth, Tom Brady in a sixth, but the difference in those guys, Russell Wilson was a four-year starter. Brady started 2 years, and Prescott started three. These guys today, the quarterback who started the most games in college of the top eight pick was Kellen Mond of A&M, who went to Minnesota. He started 46. Trevor Lawrence had 36. Zach Wilson, 28. Fields, 22. Kyle Trask, 22. Lance and Mac Jones, 17. and Davis Mills had 11 at Stanford. So he is way behind. So if Tyrod Taylor, who'd been playing great, were here, I would think my preseason prediction of a 2-1 start would have been accurate. But I don't see any way that they're going to beat the Panthers, who are 2-0, coming off a great win over New Orleans. And right now, Carolina, with Phil Snow, former defensive coordinator at Baylor, followed Matt Rhule to Charlotte last year. They're number one in defense against the run and against the pass, and they're getting to go up against a rookie quarterback who's playing way before his time.
Mac Jones, you mentioned 17 starts. I know it's a small sample size. What's your take on him and the Patriots after two games?
Well, first of all, Jimmy, he gets to play for the greatest coach in history. He gets to play for a team that has a good running game, a team that had guys coming back from opt-outs on defense, and they lose to the Dolphins at home by one, and then they beat up on the Jets. So I want to see what he does against a good team in which he has to come from behind. Maybe he'll be able to do that. But right now, based on these two games, he's been the best quarterback, but there's a reason for that. I'll bet you if you put Trevor Lawrence in there with Bill Belichick, his rating wouldn't be 57.1 with four interceptions and five touchdowns and a 50% completion percentage like it is with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. And another thing, I was going to say something about Carolina where Sam Darnold's playing great. And everybody sees that way they beat up on New Orleans. You take eight coaches off any team's staff, including six on offense, and there's a pretty good chance that offense is going to be terrible, and the Saints was, but that's a pretty good excuse.
Yeah, that's exactly right, dadgummit. How good do you think Carolina is?
Well, we're not going to find out in this game. They're going to be 3-0. I haven't looked at their schedule beyond this one. They'll play Tampa twice. They'll play New Orleans twice, play Atlanta twice. The way the Falcons are playing, that looks like two easy victories. But every year there's a team or two that start off like 5-0. Their fan base gets hysterical. They start, how do you order Super Bowl tickets? And then they fade. It's tried and true that it's not what you do in September and October. It's November, December. And then, of course, January. And maybe the Panthers will get there a second year under Matt Rhule. But it looks to me, I want to see more of Sam Darnold. Because right now, working with Joe Brady, the former LSU offensive coordinator, they're making the Jets look really stupid, which is nothing new because the Jets have looked stupid for decades.
John, we saw a lot of Jekyll and Hyde performances in terms of teams that looked awesome in week one, really lay eggs in week two, and vice versa. Teams that stumbled out of the gate week one looked so much better in week two. Par for the course, or was there a little bit more of that in terms of huge swings one week to the next than normal?
Well, I think some of that, John, has to do with who you're playing, where you're playing, COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You know, not only the Saints been wiped out by the hurricane, they were wiped out by COVID-19, but they'll rebound. They're too good not to rebound. They have too good of an organization. If it was a bad organization, they'd probably go straight down the toilet. But that's not going to happen to the Saints with Sean Payton running that show. And people are all fired up about the Rams, and they should be, but they haven't done anything real impressive. They won a close game against the Colts. The team is beaten up. But now they play Tampa. And when I look at, you go back, the Buccaneers have won 10 consecutive games going back to last season, counting the four playoff games, and they're averaging 34.7 points a game. That's amazing, especially when you consider Brady's 44 years old, but during that stretch he has more touchdown passes than anybody in the NFL. So I'm wondering, because Packers don't seem to be as good as they were, Saints don't seem to be as good as they were, Rams still don't have a running game. Could the Buccaneers be a threat to be the first team to go 17-0 regular season? I'm guessing no, but it sure would be fun to watch.
There was a huge win for the Baltimore Ravens Sunday night. But Lamar Jackson had not beaten Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs had won four straight over the Ravens. What was it like to see not only the Chiefs suffer their first loss in September with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, but he also threw an interception, which he had not done in the first month of the season?
As somebody asked me on one of my other shows if they exercised the Chiefs demon, I said, yeah, 2 years ago the Texans went to Arrowhead and beat up on the Chiefs. And they had been beaten by the Chiefs in regular season and the playoffs. And everybody said, well, boy, they exercised that Chiefs demon all right. They did. They exercised it so much. They had 51 points in the playoffs and blew a 24-0 lead. So until you do it in the playoffs, it sounds good, but you never know. I think if the Ravens and the Chiefs played in Arrowhead in January, I'm pretty sure everybody would go to the Chiefs and they'd be favored. But it was fun to watch Baltimore. I think Baltimore, John Harbaugh is a great coach. He shows it all the time. To lose your top three running backs and still rush for over 250 yards is amazing, even if you do have the greatest running quarterback in history. Guys, I hate to do this, but I have a coach calling. I have to take it. I apologize.
All right, John, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We'll catch up next week. So that's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline as, again, his pesky day job continues to infringe upon our show.
We got to do something about that.
Just a couple of cowboys on steel horses we ride.
And they're wanted dead or alive.
That's right. But anyhow, we've got a lot coming your way before we step aside in today's show, because Eric Kane will join us next hour for a Tennessee football practice report. We'll also have more from Tennessee's football program. As Jimmy, while you might not get the opportunity to view practice, we still get the opportunity to hear from a number of contributors. Really think it was cool that that Walker Merrill was made available today.
Yeah, he was, and it was good to talk to him. And he's the guy that I said, if somebody told you, three games into your Tennessee career, you'd lead the team in receiving, what would you have said? He said, I'd said they're crazy. So, but it was good to visit with him and enjoy the conversation with him. We also had Jaquan Blakely was made available as well. Byron Young, who made his debut after being basically suspended for two games for academic reasons. Still not sure I think that was the right thing. But anyway, that's what happened with him. He was a bit rusty. He acknowledged that. Rodney Garner acknowledged that. I expect Byron Young to be much more active against Florida. They're going to need him to be. But it's going to be a challenge for him, because now he's got to not just deal with being a pass rusher, he's got to deal with that zone read. And that might be a challenge for him. We'll see how he does there. So a couple of other notes, our thoughts and prayers with Mike DeBoard. Folks will remember Mike DeBoard. He was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee for a couple of years. And though he got criticism, that offense scored a lot of points. Had a lot of yards rushing with Josh Dobbs leading the way, and he has suffered a severe stroke and had a brain bleed. Correct, John?
So yes.
He's, boy.
Yeah, his family made the announcement, and it was his son who was saying these next few days are super critical, so all prayers appreciated.
Yeah. So, guys, really nice guy. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed interviewing him. He went from Tennessee to Indiana as offensive coordinator, and then he was at Kansas briefly. And also, Scott Stallings, we talked about him tying for six in the debut in the PGA out in Napa, California. Well, he won $220,000 plus.
Wow.
That's a really nice start toward making the money list, top 125 in the money list. So good for Scott Stallings. Congratulations to him in that regard. And, John, you tell me, Vanderbilt's lost a running back for the year, Damon Davis?
Yeah, I have not seen. I've looked for more on the story since seeing it on the scroll on ESPN, and have not been able to find greater detail. But it looks like Vanderbilt, which struggled offensively against ETSU, but I thought had a very, very solid performance and a nice rally and a win at Colorado State. Acquitted themselves, I thought, reasonably well against Stanford, but it looks like they might be without one of their key performers.
Yeah, it's hard to tell this. I have a theory that's not foolproof, but I think that in a given season, if you play 12 games, you're going to usually have two games where you maybe play over your head. You're going to have two bad games, And then the other eight are pretty much what you are. Unless, of course, you're Alabama or some great team out there. But that's usually the way it goes. You'll have a couple of tremendous games, a couple of them that aren't so good, and then about eight of them is what you look like. And so where it's Vanderbilt, I don't know. Maybe ETSU's the worst game that they play. Ramon Davis, season-ending surgery to repair a torn toe ligament in his right foot. Ouch. Yeah, that's tough to have that situation. But and Vanderbilt doesn't have a lot of skilled people anyway, so mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a tough year. I don't think Vanderbilt wins a conference game.
Yeah, they're leading rusher.
Yeah, wow. So and Ken Seals is a nice quarterback. He's got a pretty good receiver in Cam Johnson, but I don't see a whole lot else that would strike any kind of fear into you. So that's a tough blow for Vanderbilt. They lose anybody that's productive on offense. That just hurts an offense that's not very good anyway.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number three now in the rearview mirror. We've got hour number four coming up, as I mentioned, an Eric Kane practice report. And next, your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6. Stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.